Welcome to Who Are You, a CSI podcast. I am Raven, and I've seen CSI through around 3 to 4 times.
And I'm Nick, and these are my first time experiencing these episodes.
And today, we are reviewing Season 4, Episode 1, Assume Nothing. Original air date is September 25th, 2003. Director is Richard J. Lewis. Writers are Anthony E. Zeiker and Danny Cannon. And we begin today's episode, as we begin many episodes, so I'm glad we're not rocking the boat here at the beginning of Season 4 with shots of the Vegas Strip before we head on into a casino. But before we spend some time in the casino, Nick, what is our Vegas score for today's episode?
We have many shots of the Vegas Strip.
We have a lot of shots. They were like, hey, I know we were gone for a few months, so just to remind you, this is in Vegas. Yeah. This is based, we are headquartered in Vegas.
There's 8 shots in 6 seconds in the opening scene, which is less than 1 second per shot. But through the whole episode, there's 18 shots over 45 seconds.
Holy crud. Is that the most we've ever had, like lengthwise, like 45 seconds?
Yeah, I think so. And I have a new scoring method. I am decreasing the value of individual shots.
Okay.
Sometimes we get these scenes like where there's like 8 shots in 6 seconds.
Yeah, they're like boom, 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 boom.
Like, is that more Vegas than like 9 seconds of panoramics? I don't know.
I don't know either. Listeners weigh in.
And so I just decided to, so there used to be like 3 points per shot. Now it's 1 point per shot.
Okay.
So it should be a lot harder to get to 55, which we were starting to do quite frequently.
We definitely had quite a few 55s last
season. We had no problem getting there this episode. We would have been, even on the new score, it's like 60-something. It probably would have been our highest score of all time. Yeah, old score, it would have been like 100. So this is one of the most Vegas-y episodes, including plenty of Vegas locations, shots on the Strip or scenes taking place on the Strip, scenes taking place in multiple casino hotels.
Yes.
And so, yeah, very Vegas-y episode. We're maxed out again at 55. But I think we'll have a more, unless they really amp it up, a more subdued Vegas score in general this season.
We will find out. So we're Vegas heavy to begin with. We have Vegas Strip. Then we're inside of a casino. There is a couple gambling. This is my missed spot the guest star.
Oh, yes.
My missed spot the guest star. So I did not recognize her. So the woman of this couple in the show, her character is Natasha Rifkin. I did not, at watching it, go like, oh, I think I know her. But when I was looking at the IMDb to like start getting ready for recording this episode, and I looked at her photo on IMDb, I was like, wait a second, maybe I do know her. And I do. She plays Roxy on Bones. But as I was saying to Nick before we started recording, she has brown hair in Bones. And she's one of those people that hair color makes her look like a different person. I mean, she's gorgeous both ways. It's not a slight one way or the other. She is gorgeous in both appearances, but she it just didn't like click for me. So this is my missed spot, the guest star. So her and her husband are there gambling, and he spots this couple, this other couple. He's kind of like peering over at them. And like, he's like, they're kind of like sending suggestive looks. You can kind of see the husband's like sort of into it. They move, they're actively gambling. They then move to a bar. The other couple followed them to the bar, and at this point, I have an actual spot the guest star.
Oh.
So the husband of this couple, I guess I'm not going to say what his character name is because it's not revealed until quite a bit later, but the actor who plays the husband of this other couple is Rudolph Martin. And funny, this is, I was talking to Nick ahead of time, and I said, I think there's going to be a spot the guest star that we both have it, but for different things, and this was him, but evidently not, because Nick was very surprised when I said, nope, this is what's on the guest star. He was like, what are you talking about? I know him from NCIS. He plays Ari Aswari, basically like the main villain in the first, like either the first season or the second season of NCIS. But he's also in 5 episodes of 24, and that's where I thought maybe Nick would know him.
Yeah, he looks like a bog standard Eastern European villain in a lot of things, and he probably has that role. I actually think the thing that I probably should have known him from is Ford versus Ferrari, but I actually have, because I don't actually remember him from that, I didn't count it, and I have no idea how big his part is, but I was like, that's a really good movie. I've watched it a couple times, and he's got a part in that, but it could be very fleeting, which could be why, but
yeah.
Yeah, this guy looked very familiar, but also looked very, like, typecastable.
And I will say that...
He didn't talk much.
Yes, but I will say that when he did talk, he has a very... He sounds very similar to how he sounds on NCIS. And his lines... He doesn't talk that much on NCIS either, but his lines are very poignant. And so you kind of, like, remember them and how he talks and his cadence. And so it was already, like... oh, I think I know who that is. And then when I heard him talk, I was like, oh, that's definitely him. And yes, so this is... Yeah.
All four of these people in the couple almost look like they were familiar to me. And I was like, I just think they, you know, they just look like bit actor, not bit actors, but they're just like actors who are in a lot of things or something. And I was like, I can't remember them from anything. I said... And I was like curious to get the end, but I do have some actual Spot the Guest Stars this episode who are like, I definitely knew in the real spirit of Spot the Guest Star. It's like when I saw those people, I was like, I knew that. In fact, one of these actors I noticed in the first time I watched in the opening credits because they have a very standout name, in my opinion. And the other one I picked up after I knew they were in the episode, I was like, oh yeah, his name is in the opening credits.
Yeah. You're like, oh, that is indeed him. So they're at the bar, the original couple. Other couple followed them there. And now this is where, you know, the husband's going to the wife and being like, how frisky do you feel? Because he's thinking we can double up with this other couple and have some fun. And she's on board.
Yeah. He's a very other husband, fairly attractive.
He's an attractive gentleman.
Wife is fairly attractive. So I think that, you know, it's a classic happens in Vegas, stays in Vegas type moment.
Yeah. Yeah. So... we then see a housekeeper going through a hotel. She arrives at the room. The like blinds are broken. So she's like trying to get them open.
All right. I have something here.
Okay.
There are three examples in this episode where I am borderline on product placement.
Oh, okay.
The ability to read the Dyson vacuum on this lady's cart through this long pathway down.
Notice
how in That's focus so the text was. I was like, is this on purpose?
Yeah, you were like,
and like, I don't know about you, and maybe this could happen in Vegas, but how often do hotels buy Dyson vacuums for their maids? If anything, they're buying either cheap vacuums or like specific industrial, like
usually industrial ones,
because they use them so much. And nothing, Dysons are great vacuums, but they're not designed to vacuum 8 hours a day.
No,
you know, every single day. And so it's like, it seemed, but it's totally plausible. It could just be this is the prop they have on set, but it was in focus for so long. So, but here's the problem with this: they don't mention it. They don't show it being used.
No,
and so I wrote it down and then I was like, I put a question mark next to it. And the second watch through, I was like, I don't know. But it's one of like three times in this episode where I felt like, is that a product placement?
You're like, is this
so I'm going to call them all out. And okay. I'm curious, maybe if they were just going for a more subdued product placement this episode.
Maybe. I mean, it's possible. So she doesn't get to vacuum though, because she turns around and she finds a dead body, which then... we get what I think is a fun transition camera move. The camera just kind of spins and Grissom is there. But obviously, you know, they had to call CSI. CSI said to get there. But instead of, like, the walk up to the scene, they just kind of, like, turn the camera and it's, like, right on Grissom's face. And he's in the hotel room.
Pan through time moment.
Yeah, I liked it. And Catherine's there as well. They realize that the room has been stripped. Like, towels taken, sheets taken, like, everything is gone from the room. We also learn that the victim is Alice Dominguez, and it's not her room. Like, the room is not in her name. They also realize that she's married, but where is said husband?
It took me a while to figure out this isn't one of the other two couples. I was like, she doesn't look anything like these
people. No, yeah. The first time you watch it, you don't quite catch it, and then you're like, wait, no, hold on a second. She doesn't look like any of the four people that we saw in the opening. Spoiler alert. She is not any of the four people in the opening shot.
And they get there, but like, I was like really confused. I was like, I assume a lot of people were confused.
I think it was done on purpose. So,
yeah, I think you're supposed to assume that it's the other couple, because obviously the weird, creepy watcher couple from the hotel are going to be the murderers, right?
Yeah.
So you believe.
Catherine's phone vibrates as they're waiting there, and Grissom hears it. Yeah. And this was, I thought, a really funny exchange. Catherine's like, oh, so you're back. And he goes, huh? And then that brings us to credits.
A cheeky wink to credits. Catherine's phone, the second product placement in my mind. Ooh. He's like, oh, new phone. And it's sort of like clipped to hang outside of her bag. And they show it for like 5 seconds. Then she picks it up. And I was like, Motorola flip phone this time. I mean, it's not a Razor, which is what I would think you would pay. Product placement for. I mean, we're at the very dawn of phones, and maybe the Razor isn't out yet. We're definitely not in smartphone times, I don't think yet.
No.
Because this aired in 2003.
Yeah. So it was filmed probably 2002, beginning of 2003.
So my guess is that was a new phone and this is a product placement, but they don't even say, like, modern day, they'd be like, new phone, be like, yeah, this is my new Motorola, like, 752 or whatever it's called. and then that would be the, and then they'd show her opening it up and the screen and pushing the buttons to make the call.
But maybe they were more subtle before.
Yeah, I was like, I think they're a little bit more subdued with the product placement here. But my last product placement, which isn't going to be that far from now, is probably the most likely product placement and the most least likely product placement.
Okay. So we'll get there when we get there. After credits, we're with Warwick, Nick, and Jabrass. They're walking down the hallway of the hotel. We learn that the hotel room where the murder took place is, like, right by the stairwell, the door to the stairwell, making it murder central, like, easy to murder and escape without
leaving a trace. A bit of a callback. This was a topic in an earlier episode.
It was a topic in an earlier episode. So then we're back in the hotel room. Kristen and Catherine are there. We're realizing that the victim, Alice, her throat was cut from the front, which is not normally how, like, normally when someone's throat is cut, someone comes up behind them and, like, slits their throat from behind them.
Assassin style.
Yeah. There's also no defensive wounds. There's no ligature marks. So this is all a little bit strange. We then have Warwick approaching Sarah down in the casino. And we find out that Alice was staying in a different room. Like, that wasn't her room. She was registered to a different room. Husband, still MIA. And so they decide, like, let's go check out their, like, Alice's room. See if there's any clues there. Anything that can, like, help us figure out what happened to her. We then cut to Jabrass talking to a man in a bathrobe who is seemingly, like, a witness to this crime. And so he's talking to him, and he's, you know, the guy in the robe is like, hey, I heard. And this is also a miss spot the guest star. I thought this was going to be your spot the guest star. I just went on this person.
Oh, really?
He's the crypt keeper.
Oh, I mean, he does look like the crypt keeper, though.
I'm just saying, he's the crypt keeper in 93 episodes of Tales from the Crypt.
That would be 93 episodes I probably haven't seen.
I haven't seen 93 of them, but I have seen it. Some episodes of Tales from the Crypt. So this is also a missed spot, the guest star. This is John Cassier. So Jabrass is talking to this gentleman in the robe. He's saying that he heard 2 to 3 people arguing. And so Jabrass is trying to get information from him. And bathroom guy is like, yep, nope, I definitely heard them at 10:30. And Jabrass is like, that's like a really specific time. Like, how do you know that it was like right at 10:30 that you heard them? And he's like, oh, because I ordered a pay-per-view. Arma? Get it on. And Jabrass is like, oh, you mean Armageddon? And the guy's like, no, I mean Armageddon on. I love this whole exchange. Maybe this is just like the childish humor in me. And so Jabrass is like, oh, like finally understanding that, you know, he rented a porno. And he's like, oh, it's a good movie. And the guy's like, worked for me. And Jabrass is just like, okay, kind of like giggles and walks away. Loved it. Loved every moment of this scene. Thought it was fantastic.
Hey, this is a very sex positive episode.
It's a very sex positive episode. I thought this was great. So then we have Nick lifting Prince from the stairway door, and he exits. He then, like, goes out in the stairwell, looks down, walks down, exits. There's a valet and a garage here. He ends up running into Kenny, who is someone that he used to play baseball with.
Hey guys. How you doing? I'm with the Las Vegas Crime Lab.
Nick Stokes?
And I'm, yeah.
What's up? It's Kenny. Kenny Richmond. Rebel baseball, play backup catcher.
Kenny? Oh, hey, Kenny. How you doing, man? Good to see you.
Good to see you. Yeah. Look at you. Yeah. What are you doing here? Cop now?
Crime scene investigator. I'm on a case.
And I believe this is Nick's.
Yes. This is my spot the guest star, which is a great spot the guest star, as I was telling Raven before we started, because I definitely know who this person is. Mm-hmm. I basically did not watch the show they're known for. So this is Kenny Richmond, who's the valet in this, is played by Josh Holloway.
Yeah.
And he's undoubtedly most known for playing Sawyer in Lost, who is one of the main characters of that show.
For sure.
And I've probably seen him on late night TV, but also Lost is one of those shows that was on in my house a lot of times when I was coming and going, you know, out at night. And everyone in my family watched, and I just could not care less. I figured I'd watch it one day. And then as the show ended, people were kind of very mad about it. I was like, well, I'm never watching the show.
Yep.
I was like, there's no payoff at the end. I'm never investing in hundreds of episodes of a TV show.
That's why I never finished Game of Thrones. I watched most of Game of Thrones.
And neither did George R. R. Martin.
And then everyone was very angry at the last season. And I was like, you know what? Yeah. I guess I'm going to watch it.
The writer of Game of Thrones has not and will never finish Game of Thrones.
Probably not.
He's been working on the same book since the first show started. And that show's been off the air for like 10 years.
Yep.
And so it's like, he's like completely given up. He's made his money. He got his fame. That's what he wanted.
Yeah, he's good.
He was always doing it to be a famous author and then somehow just became a famous person through television. And now he's like, I don't need to write any more books. He also, that's writing is hard. It takes a lot of time.
Yeah, it
does. A lot of energy. Yep. He's got Grammys to go to.
Yeah, you know? he's got more important things to do. So, sorry, we got a little derailed there. So he's talking to Kenny and he lets slip innocently to Kenny about Murder Central. Oh yeah, it was the last room, you know, in the hallway next to the stairwell. We call that Murder Central. So he's giving Kenny
also how he died, which because Kenny was like, he got bashed in the head. He's like, no,
slit her throat, bled all over the room.
Yeah,
yeah, it was given maybe a little bit too much detail there. Nick,
I picked up how much there was on the second watch. That was like one of those things. I was like, oh yeah, he really did. Now that I knew that it was important, what he was saying, as paying attention, I was like, oh yeah, he told him a lot.
He told him a lot. We're then with Catherine with Doc Robbins, and we realize that the victim, Alice, was sliced gently, which is very strange. So not only was she cut from the front, but it was like, you know, normally when someone goes to like slit someone's throat, they almost decapitate them. Like they make sure the job is done. It's like blunt force. It is messy. It is aggressive. And this was like cut just enough to kill her, but not anything more than that. We also learned that she had alcohol and ecstasy in her system, so she was out there trying to have a fun night. But more importantly, on her toes is a piece of glitter from a strip club called Shimmer that Doc Robbins is very familiar with. And go, Doc Robbins. Proud of my friend.
Catherine very obviously has a background adult dancing, and Doc Robbins is really shameless, which is great. As I said, it's a very great example.
Very sex positive. Like, yeah, just being like, yeah, you're going
to basically watching porn in his hotel room, which I don't know why. I honestly think Brass should have known what he meant when he said he's ordering a pay-per-view.
That if someone tells me that they're at a hotel and they're ordering a pay-per-view, I'm like, you're ordering porn. I did it.
What else would you pay for?
I've done it my young exploring adventurous days.
Nowadays, the internet is free.
Yeah, I mean, it's on my phone now. This is before I could just watch it on my phone if I so desired to.
And also, it was important because he said there's thick walls, which was like, obviously, anyway, to get back to this scene, but it's cool that Doc Robbins, he's very sort of shameless about it and cool with it. I will say, I swear to God, the first time I watched the scene, I thought he said he was an investor. He was saying like what street it was on.
Oh, you invested in this investor?
I was like, Doc Robbins is putting his quarter money into owning a small business, you know?
Which supporting, is fine. Good, support those small businesses.
Yeah. Young independent contractors who want to come and work. No, but he was like, he was on Industrial Street or something, he said.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay.
And I said, the first time I thought he said he was an investor. And that's why it made sense when Kevin was like, yeah, go, Doc. Like,
yeah. You know? All right. Yeah. No, I loved, again, this is another scene where I just like loved basically everything about at least the second half of it. We're then with Sarah and Warwick. They're finally at Alice's hotel room. Doesn't look like the bed was slept in, but they do realize that they parked a Ford Explorer. There's like a parking receipt from parking a Ford Explorer. Yeah. So this brings us to Nick finding the husband dead in said Ford Explorer in the parking garage. Nick, Sarah, Warwick are then all there processing the car. We realize that unlike his wife, you know, his throat was also slashed, but his was slashed from the back. So someone came up behind him in the car, the back seat of the car, and sliced his neck. Sarah finds said knife. We're then with Nick and Grissom. They're with Jackie in prints. They want to compare the husband's print to prints that they pulled off of the knife and the door handle.
This, I waited on this earlier.
Okay.
This is my third product placement.
Oh, okay. All right. Let's go for it.
This thing is called, I wrote it down, Pro Lift Fingerprint Collection System.
Yes. Yes. When he's printing the door.
Yeah, when Nick's printing the door, they show it again. three times in the scene, and Jackie says, oh, these new fingerprinting kits are really great. They get a really good lift. And I was like, all right, this is definitely a product placement. I mean, if you're a fingerprinting, like, new fingerprinting technology, where else are you going to advertise?
This is true. There's really not a lot of options for you. So they use this magical new fingerprinting tool, and they're able to match the husband's print to both the knife and the door handle. But Greg Sanders enters, and there is both the husband and the wife's blood on the knife. So now it's looking like, okay, yep, he killed his wife, but who killed him? Right? He didn't. This was not a self-inflicted neck wound.
Yeah.
So then
it was like, you know, it's like if you think there's like a murder-suicide, but then you find a murder-murder.
Yes, you find a murder. So we go with Grissom and Catherine to Shimmer, to the strip club, and they're talking to the stripper, and...
This is my second spot the guest star.
Oh, yay! All right, go for it.
Continuing our great names for spot the guest star, this is Moon Bloodgood.
That is a solid name.
And like I said, I saw this name in the opening credits.
That name is like, so good.
I actually think I recognize the credit more than I recognize the actress. I also, at some point, need to admit that I think that this person was probably more magazines than they were on TV shows that I watched.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Or like appearing in like other things. I don't know, co-hosting or... I don't know if they were on MTV at some point or whatever, but very attractive, like, model actress. And I think I wrote down, there's a show I used to watch that they are in, but was much later, called Falling Skies, which stars Noah Wiley.
Okay.
Which I actually, when I looked at it, I'm pretty sure I only watched the first season. But they were also in one of the Terminator movies with Christian Bale, which I know I've watched. I just don't remember that movie at all. I watched it once a long time ago, probably late at night after working at Blockbuster Video.
Blockbuster. So they're talking to Stripper, as she is so credited in this episode. This is another scene where I just love everything that happens in this scene. So she's talking to the strippers, talking to Catherine and Grissom. And Catherine keeps having to like translate.
Yes, like code or whatever.
Work speech into something that Grissom can understand. Like she's like, oh, like a doggy in the window. And Grissom like looks at Catherine. She's like, they like to watch. And like just things like it just, I just thought it was very funny. So we learned that she does recognize the victims. They were like really good customers of hers, but they were not the ones paying her. In fact, the other couple that they were with,
yes,
the watching couple, were the ones the doggies in the window were the ones who were paying. So then Catherine gets a call, so she turns away for a bit. And then the stripper tries to seduce Grissom. He seems kind of down for it. He doesn't seem opposed to...
Simultaneously, I'd say he's sort of like...
Like an observer. He's almost just I'll take a look at this. Like, sure, you want to like...
Like, yeah, it's almost like it's not having the effect that you think it should have on me.
Yes.
But I find this fascinating.
Yes.
Very Dr. Spock.
Yes. And so Catherine comes back over and she says that she has to go. It's regarding the Sam Braun case. So she needs to head out. We then have Sarah with Archie. They're watching elevator footage. And so they're seeing the victims go up. There's like another couple like hidden in the corner. They can't see them. And then they find the arguing couple who went up and also went back down. And then we got a little computer magic here to zoom in on his room key. I was like, no. As soon as I saw this, I was like, oh no, Nick is not going to like this. Nick is not going to be happy with this.
We went from 24 DPI to 24,000 DPI.
Perfect. So they realize that it's like a room key to another.
Tangiers.
I literally put in my notes, magic to room key.
Yeah, I have to sort of stop harping on the magic, zoom and enhance.
It is part of the show. So. Yeah. And so we're then with Warwick and Nick. They're kind of doing some work as like the news is playing in the background, and we realize that Kenny blabbed to the news.
Yeah, and this is like on the second watch, I realized like how many of the details the anchor woman
was saying. Yeah, quite a few. And Warwick is, you know, Nick kind of admits it to Warwick. Warwick is like, all right, like, you should probably tell Grissom before, like, he catches you in a lie. And then Grissom is, like, magically at the door and is like, lie about what? But before we spend more time on that one.
And the best part is, you gotta remember, like, he just got his hearing back.
He seems to have
pretty good hearing.
We then have Catherine entering a courthouse, but Sam Braun is exiting the courthouse because it looks like his case is not going to trial.
Surrounded by reporters.
Breaking news.
Situation.
Brand new. We'll find out a little bit more about this in a few scenes. Before then, we have Grissom and Jim Brass interviewing the original couple, the couple that started our episode. And they are saying that the couple that they met, like, invited them to their room, but then they, like, kind of creeped them out. And the husband kept asking, like, how much do you love your wife? And then this was another, like, again, this is probably, like, giving away how I'm going to rate this episode. I thought this was a really fun scene where the husband and wife are not arguing in the scene, but are visibly like having, like, edgy with, you know, and she's like, the wife is like, yeah. And, like, she started to take his pants. Like, she was, oh, because the husband goes, oh, and then she was naked. And then the wife is like, yeah. And then she, like, started to take your pants off. And he's like, well, that is why we were up there. Like, we agreed.
You liked it too much.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, she was, you were like too fast about it. Like, you were too into it. Like, it just, it felt very real. It felt like you didn't think through what joining another couple in the bedroom was actually going to be. And now afterwards you're having, like, the fallout from, like, you didn't talk through really how this might affect you. Or like, even jealousies that can stir up. And stuff.
Like, everyone has had friends or been this couple where you're in a relationship with somebody and you just hold on to things and fight on something, and, like, and everyone around them is, like, rolling their eyes. Yeah. Like, the way they were fighting is so realistic to the way people fight.
Yes.
Like, after the fact, like bringing it back up very, like, passive aggressive. It was really well done.
Yeah, that was really well done. And so we learn that they were arguing in instant arguing in the hotel room with the other couple. Thus, the couple kicked them out of the room and saved their lives. So, yay, allegedly. Arguing is good for something.
Allegedly. Spoiler alert. I have a theory about this couple. The end of this episode, which may or may not be true.
Oh, okay. All right. We'll get there. So then we have a fairly touching scene between Catherine and Warwick. They're in the locker room, in which Catherine, obviously very sad about what's happening with the Sam Braun case, because she admits to Warwick that she didn't go to Sam Braun. She didn't go to Grissom. She went to Greg Sanders to get her DNA tested when she started suspecting that Sam Braun was her father. And the reason why they are kicking the evidence that could have been used to prosecute him in the case is because Catherine didn't follow standard procedures and essentially tainted the blood evidence that they got from the lockbox.
Yeah, which is, I mean, we just had the lab explosion towards the end of last season. Yeah. And now this. Catherine's, the shining star of the CSI team, in my opinion. You know, the experience and the professionalism and now multiple negative things. I get the feeling that this could become a theme this season. I'm not sure.
We'll find out.
I did get some closure, I guess, in finding out what happened with the Sam.
When I was watching the scene,
I was like,
Nick was very upset at the end of the season finale that there wasn't, like, a clear cut ending to the Sam Braun
case. Just tell me if you're going to bring him to trial or not, you know?
And here we find out, beginning of the season, they tried and they were not able to.
I mean, the good news is, as I, you know, said before, like, you have besmirched his name. Like, the rumor will be out there.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah. We're then with Grissom and Jim Brass, they're now at a motel. There's a new crime scene. They're wondering if it's connected, if this is their kind of serial killers. But if it is, it's a downgrade. They went from, like, a really swanky, nice hotel, like, right on the strip, to, like, this kind of, like, seedy motel in the background.
Discount motel, really.
Yeah. And so they go inside the hotel room, and the victim is a woman. She has her throat slashed. We learn that she is Wendy Lagerman. And again, where's the husband? Which leads Grissom to scare a man who's sitting in his car in the parking lot.
That's good. Like, I had that moment where I was like, oh, another person in a car. that must be the MO. And then that person just like wakes up. And at first I thought it was really the husband. I don't know why, but
not the husband.
Turned out to be someone else.
Yep. And so Grissom and Chibarath are kind of talking as this is happening. I put kid. He has to be at least, I assume, 18 or 19 because he rented a hotel room, but he looked and was dressed very young.
Young
in my opinion.
Person.
Young person is getting ice from an ice machine. And as they're scooping the ice, they're not. Sorry, what was that?
He's like eavesdropping.
Yeah, he's like eavesdropping, right? So he's not looking at the ice as he's scooping it. He's just kind of like, he's looking at the two people talking and he's scooping the ice. But we as the audience see that the ice is getting bloodier and bloodier as he's scooping it into his bucket. And then he does turn and look inside the ice machine and screams because look at that. There's a body in there. Yeah.
I also love that Brass, like they're at a crime scene. A guy screams like bloody murder, basically come help me.
And he just sort of casually
walks over and is like, chill out.
And so they're talking about it. And Grissom mentions that this one seems different and it's not right. Like there's something not right about this one compared to the previous crime scene. We then have David is now on scene. He's talking to Grissom and Grissom is explaining that he has to like, you know, the body's still frozen. You're gonna have to like tilt to get him out. So David and another person from the morgue try to get the victim out. Can't get him out. There's a lot of tilting. There's a lot of like Ross and Chandler from Friends. Pivot! So then they put him back in the ice machine. Grissom breaks his knee.
Yep, breaks his kneecap.
Breaks his kneecap. Evidently, he's not worried about there being evidence for the kneecap. And so then they're wheeling the victim away. And so now the team can get started with, they have to like essentially transport all this ice back.
Yeah, they're going to bucket it, you know, tag the buckets, bring it back, investigate the buckets.
So they're the bucket brigade, as Sarah has called them.
There's a massive amount of urgency on getting as much ice into these buckets before it melts.
It's 120 degrees. So they're like, we got to do this really quick. So they form a bucket brigade to get as much ice as they can. And then as they're removing ice, this reveals that there's a knife inside of the ice machine. So Grissom takes it out. He has like Warwick process that. He also notices like a blood smear. So he wants Sarah to like take a closer look at the ice machine. And then he asks Nick to join him in the motel room.
Yeah, we don't care about the ice anymore.
No, ice doesn't matter. Just leave it out. There's a knife and there's blood. Who cares?
The rest of that ice is all going to melt while you're in the bedroom.
Doesn't matter.
And everyone else is processing evidence. You've just given up on the ice. Apparently you don't care anymore.
Does not matter. There's more important things. So they go inside of the motel room and Nick immediately like guilty conscience. Nick is like a 5-year-old kid that his parents are just like waiting for him to say that he did the wrong thing because they know that
the lamp playing ball.
Yeah, like
the house.
He can't hold it in. And Grissom's like, no, I asked you to shut the door because like I just want to see what the crime scene looked like when the killers were in here. Like it's not because I want to talk to you alone. So instead he has Nick like go into the bathroom, see if there's any evidence in there. They come out and have a conversation about the magic finger, so like the vibrating bed, which I think my earliest memory of knowing that a vibrating bed is a thing was that there was a vibrating bed in The Sims, in the first Sims video game. Yeah.
I think there's a bunch of cult, like,
I think that's the only, I think once I got older, I saw other like TV shows and movies that had vibrating beds in them. But like, I played The Sims when I was like 10.
And like the first Sims is a vibrating bed?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. I will say I've definitely stayed at hotels with vibrating beds. I've not at a point in my life where I was old enough to have money to try one out. I've never used one. I've always sort of said, if I ever find myself in a hotel with one, I'm going to use it just to find out. We used to stay in a lot of like roadside motels.
Yeah.
Go skiing when I was a kid.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
And so, but I'd be with my dad and my brothers. And obviously I was like a, you know, under like from the ages of like 8 to 14, 15. So like, I wouldn't be walking around with a pocket full of change either.
Right. Yeah.
And I think even when I was older, if we ever ran into one, it was probably broken or disassembled. But
yeah,
I was like, I remember like the first time I saw one in person being like, those are real. Those aren't just in like.
Yeah. You're like, oh, there's like a real thing. It's not just like a thing for TV.
The Animaniacs or something.
Yeah. So Nick mentions that they're good for sex, the magic fingers. They're good for sleep as well. And they realize that they already know at this point and have already kind of touched upon it, that there's a sexual aspect to these killings. Like the couple definitely has like some sexual leanings when it comes to these killings. And so they're thinking maybe they blew the circuit, putting like too many coins in the bed and like wanting the bed to run for too long. So now they're going to print. They want to print the coins that are in the vibrating bed to see if they can, you know, find any matches.
I'm calling shenanigans on the number of coins that come out of this machine.
So many coins come out of this machine.
First off, unless they're implying they put $10 in quarters in.
And they knew to bring $10 of quarters with them?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I think the idea
is... Were you doing laundry afterwards at the laundromat? Like, what were you doing?
I think the notion is, like, these, you know, are all the different people who have used this. But, like, who knows anything about, like, small business hotels knows that quarter thing gets checked once a week at minimum.
Probably.
You know, all those quarters get collected and cashed in. No one's leaving large sums of cash.
Yeah, in the room for people to be able to, like, break into.
But so, it was kind of, it just made a good visual to have that many quarters kind of laid out in the bed, I think. But it was like so many. I was like, there's no way.
So there's enough that Catherine is there, joins them, helps to process the quarters. And then there's a discussion that the killers probably changed their MO because they listened to the news. Womp, which womp, Nick. Womp, womp.
I don't know if I buy that. You downgrade to a seedy motel, you know.
Know I can buy it, I guess, but maybe I also, I think just because I love the show so much, I think I just give it more leeway than maybe it's due.
Yeah,
so then
this is all playing to my grandiose theme, which you, or conspiracy theory at the end of the episode.
Oh, okay.
which you may or may not already know the answer to from having seen all the episodes.
I do remember the conclusion of this, so right. So we'll, but I'm not going to like tell you, obviously. So we end the scene though with Grissom sitting on the vibrating bed and he puts a quarter in because he just needs 5 minutes to think. So that's the end of this scene.
This is also weird. First off, that's a potential crime scene and you're just laying on the bed.
I thought it was very Grissom. I was like, yeah, that makes sense. That's like a gruesome thing to do. We then have Greg Sanders approaching Nick, and of the most recent blood sample that he was given, there was two donors, one that they've identified, but one is unknown from the ice machine, so probably could be our killer. We then have Grissom talking to Catherine at the motel. They're like essentially standing right outside of the motel room door, and this is where they're talking a little bit more about how the killers like use sex to lure their victims in. So like sex is a way that they kind of lure their victims in. And then they're talking through different scenarios that could have played out, which would have prompted the husband to kill their wife. Like, was a gun put to his head? Were they threatening to do worse to the wife if he didn't kill her? Like, just kind of talking through like what could have driven the husband to kill his wife.
Yeah, like a mercy, like convince you that it's a crime of passion or like compassionate.
Yeah.
Almost like euthanasia type thing. And which is really twisted.
Yes.
It's like super, super twisted and creepy. It was dark almost for the show.
Yeah. So then they're talking about why was the husband in this instance in the ice machine and not in the car? And then they realize they don't think they have a car. And so the killers had to improvise. Like they couldn't do it the exact same way because they didn't have a car to go to. So.
Yeah. They just needed a dump.
Yeah. They just needed to kill him and not have it be like right out in the open. So then Nick is running the print that was taken from the ice machine, the knife. I can't remember, but either the ice machine or the knife. I think it was the ice machine. And the print matches to a Mandy Kleinfield. So Nick goes like running to Grissom. They have a little walk and talk. And Nick is like, this has to be them. Like, blah, 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 blah. And Grissom is like, cool your jets. Assume nothing, Nick. Like, we need to do more investigating.
Which is the title of this episode.
It is. Assume nothing.
They
omitted the Nick, though. They were like, let's not put the Nick. Let's just put assume nothing.
Which is also like a common Grissom-ism from past episodes.
Yes. So, but they do put like an APB out. They do put a like, hey, we're trying to find this couple. Like, they are wanted at least for questioning in this. Which brings us to Grissom, Jim Brassen, an officer at some nice little like poolside cabanas. I love me a cabana. I was like so jealous watching the scene. I was like, oh, this cabanas. I love cabanas.
Again, kind of keeping with the edgy Vegasness of this episode. It's one of many scenes. Like obviously they're in a strip club and you can see a lot of, you know, people in the background, and, you know, other dancers in the background in bikinis, but in this like poolside, a lot of more attractive young people walking around in bathing suits everywhere. Like no one at this pool is over the age of 40.
No, there was a sign that was like, sorry, you gotta be under 40 to be able to like hang out by our cabanas. So they approach Manny and her husband Cameron at this cabana. They're there with another couple, so another potential victim. But they send the officer away with the other couple, whisk them away. And this is where Cameron, with very little prompting, is like, oh yeah, we were at that hotel. I got a hooker. She likes to watch. And I was like, whoa, all right, Cameron. Like, again, I'm all right with people being sex positive, but you also like read the room. This is like maybe not the audience for it, you know, just saying.
Oh, he's trying to stitch himself an alibi.
Yeah. And then Grissom is fascinated with something on Cameron's foot, and he pulls off with no gloves, no warrant or anything, just pulls a piece of glitter from Shimmer off of his foot.
Which it's in plain sight.
It is in plain sight, but
I'm not sure how admissible it would be. It'll be later. I mean, I guess it's in the warrant they later bring to a judge. They mentioned it, so I guess that's something.
I guess it's something.
I will say, He started talking to Grissom after Grissom reused the catchphrase, how much do you love your wife?
Yes. So he says that, and then that prompts a conversation, a Shakespeare sonnet that then leads into a conversation about how love is conditional for most people. Not for this couple, though. Like, their love is not conditional.
Your love is
for
true.
Most people. So then we have the entire team at a table, and they are going over what they have in the case. So this is like a fairly quick, if you need a wrap up of like what has happened up to the episode, and we're nearing the end of the episode, so if you kind of need a quick wrap up of like what's been happening in this episode up until this point, this is where you get it. So they're kind of just like walking through like, okay, this is like the first murder, this is what we have for evidence, here's the second murder, here's what we have for evidence. We then are with Jim Brass and Grissom. They're at a court. Judge is not going to sign the warrant. He's saying nope. The affidavit lacks probable cause. And this is another, this is similar to like first season sheriff wants to be mayor or sheriff wants whatever.
Political.
He wants a federal appointment. So he's like, I'm not going to just be signing these warrants willy-nilly because I want a federal appointment. So
yeah, there's a lot more evidence. Like one of the things I think like prosecutors, like public district attorneys, often get a lot of flack for is like they want to have like a high case close rate.
Yes.
And so like they'll cut deals with cases that are a little bit shakier. They basically are always concerned about their numbers because they're concerned about how they look, because there's sort of this political aspect of trying to go from usually from district attorney to judge. And then once you're a judge, you have guys like this who's trying to go from judge to
like a federal, you know, appointment.
Federal judge. And so that he doesn't want to have any black marks on his record. And so, yeah. And they're really like throwing like their biggest argument is like, well, I mean, we've brought you more shaky stuff in the past and you've been, you know, you've signed it. And he's like, that's not a good argument, guys.
Nope, not a great like, one.
If anything, you're reminding him how much more critical he should be of all the warrants that you bring him from this day forward.
Yep. So we're then with Nick. He's watching footage. Catherine enters. He thinks that Grissom ratted him out about talking to like the news or like having stuff leaked to the news. And Catherine's a mom. Catherine's like, no, you ratted yourself out. Don't try to throw Grissom under the bus in this instance. Like, you ratted yourself out. And Catherine gives him like good advice. Like, look, I know you love your job. I know you're proud of your job. And I know like you want to talk about it. But like, you just got to be careful about what you say to who. And so
Catherine's the one who knows the integrity of her job.
She does.
It's really kind of an irony.
It is a little bit ironic.
You know, in some ways, I think like she's sort of talking about herself, which is like, you love this job. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And she loves her job.
She loves her job too. So as they're watching the footage, they realize that Mandy just stuck her tongue in the ear of one of the victims. And they're like, people are creatures of habit. Like, we've already watched that victim. We're not going to be able to get like DNA there. But what if she did it to one of the other victims? So they go sprinting off.
I really wanted that Chariots of Fire song in slow motion to play here.
So we have David washing a body, the ice machine body, and then Catherine and Nick burst into the room and they're like, are you washing him toe to head or head to toe? And he's like, freaked out because he has no idea what's happening. Like, he's like, what is going on? And he's like, don't ahead. And they're like, correct, which is also might be going to be the title of our episode. But they're like, yes, correct. And so they go in, they take a swab. Nick runs off with the swab. We have him anxiously awaiting with Greg Sanders to find out the results. Grissom enters. We learn that it is female DNA. We also learn that it matches the DNA that they pulled from the ice machine. So now they probably have enough for a warrant to go talk to the Kleinfields and like see what's up.
I actually think this evidence is like super shaky.
Oh, do like, you?
Yeah. First off, we had a body and it was in a public ice machine.
Fair.
That was discovered by somebody else as they were scooping out cookies.
That's true. Yep.
And then we abandoned our efforts to drain this ice machine later on. I mean, they pulled it out, like broke his knee.
But the DNA was from blood, unlike smeared onto the ice machine. Yeah. Not stuff inside of the ice machine.
The ear.
Yes. The part in the ear.
Yeah. So like, and it was like, how much melted water was there going to be in that ice machine in that ear? You know what I mean? Like the contamination factor.
Yeah.
Like with different people and it's a public, like they could have just used the ice machine, right? And the body got dumped there. That's what I mean. Like in a real court of law, that would be really shaky evidence. That's why I thought it was so funny that they use this as like, this is the silver bullet.
Yeah, they're all this is it.
Also, I love it when you go in front of the judge and say, oh, you had tested this ear. Actually, no, the coroner was washing the body. So more contamination.
But he was going toe to head and not head to toe. It's all right. It's good.
I mean, that's how they it made a great moment in the episode, but I was just kind of like, I don't know that this would stay. You know, we had a whole evidentiary hearing plot line in this story. There's going to be one about this ear tongue. Well, actually, there won't be, but spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. We wrap up the episode. Jim Brass and Grissom are arriving at a home. They have the warrant now. Warrant in hand. They're there with several officers. They go. They knock on the door. Door's like slightly ajar. They ring the doorbell. No one's coming. They enter the home. They're like, hey, we got a warrant. And they find the couple murdered. Someone murdered the murderers. And we get, I think for the first time ever, a to be continued. To lead us out of this episode.
I think it is.
Because like, maybe the Paul Molander. Maybe at the end of the first Paul Molander, we got a to be Paul continued. You might be right. Okay. But
it might be the first time we actually get continued. I don't know.
So we get a to be continued. And that is the end of the episode. And so, Nick, what did you think about today's episode?
I like today's episode. I think we're going to start the season off with a bang. It's fun. It's punchy. It's a little racy. The storyline's good. Like, you didn't really know what was going on. There's like character development going on or character plot lines happening in the episode, which is great. I gave it 4.5 stars, which might be the highest I've rated an episode. Like, I think maybe I've like 1.5. But maybe a couple other 4.5s. One of the highest ratings I've ever given an episode, for sure. And gave it a replay. I'm a little like, there were a couple little things in here. I actually am very mad about this Grissom hearing storyline.
It's resolved?
Yeah, hand waved. We spent a bunch of time in this last season and then we kind of pumped it at the end and made a really big deal. And then we just sort of like pretended there was no tension in the room at all when we started this season. It's like, we have too many new viewers. We're moving on past this or something. But I don't hold that against this episode because they would have done that regardless of what the episode was.
I think so, yeah.
Like that's just a personal slight I have against the writers. Yeah, good cliffhanger. Definitely, it's always interesting when you end on a cliffhanger, you get that free tension, right?
Yeah.
Like you didn't have to like have resolve the storyline. So I don't have to have a complete judgment yet and all those things. I alluded that I have a bit of a cockamamie conspiracy theory.
Yes. What is your conspiracy theory?
So assuming that the murderers of the murderers is the couple from the opening scene.
Ooh, okay.
And I even went so far as to think like, I'm not convinced that there's not like a switcheroo that's going to happen here where like they like set up that couple and then that couple tried to do the same thing. And that's why the motive changed and went to the hotel room. On the second watch through, my cockamamie theory started to fall apart a little bit.
Okay.
I like it. We started this podcast off doing a half episode and trying to predict the rest. And this seemed like a good time to make a prediction.
And then we realized.
This is my best prediction.
Yeah. And then we realized that for the most part, it's almost like impossible to make a prediction until the last like 5 minutes of the episode. And it wasn't really fair halfway through the episode when like in a lot of instances, we still hadn't been introduced to who the killer was by that point, to be like, Nick, who do you think the killer is? When it's like, well, we haven't, it doesn't happen.
And that might be the situation here, but of the people we've been introduced to, the most likely culprits would be that couple. So I had the thought, so I wrote it down, and I figured it was worth sharing.
I like it. We'll find out pretty soon if you're correct or not. For me, I give this episode a 5 out of 5, baby. 5 out of 5.
I was so close to giving a 5.
I think this is only my second time giving a 5 out of 5. I think Lady Heather's Box was my first 5 out of 5. And now, I don't think we rated the first season, so like that's not fair.
I didn't.
Like, when we started rating, I think this is only my second 5 out of 5. And, there were definitely things where like you were like, man, that's kind of weird. Or like, could have done that better. But I think the last time we had this conversation, like, it doesn't have to be a perfect
episode. Yeah.
Yeah. Because like, if that was the case, there's probably only going to be like maybe 1 5 out of 5. And it's like, if we're looking at averages here, we should definitely have more than like 1 5 out of 5 for like a 16 season show. So I just felt like this was a great mix of like some pretty dark stuff, like the like motive and like what the killers were doing, like pretty scary, but mixed in like well with like fun and sex positivity and like hilarious jokey jokes, and then also like a lot of great, like I feel like Sarah and Work are the only ones that like didn't really have great character development in this episode, but everybody else essentially did. I just feel like there were so many times that after a scene I was like, I loved that scene, that I was like, I gotta give this a 5 out of 5. I can't say like I love everything about the scene like 7 times in an episode and then be like, no, like a 4 out of 5 stars, I guess.
Yeah, really, really good scenes. I think the when I finished watching this episode, I kind of was like, I want to watch this episode again.
That's definitely how, like, a replay for me.
I immediately gave it a replay, which it I almost never do. I almost only get things replay on the second watch through if I like feel like I got something out of the replay. But when I watched it a second time, I didn't have as visceral of an experience, and I didn't find a lot of like those like Easter eggs that I love to find. And so I was like, wait, but so I think there's one more thing that could make this, like, this episode could be better if I changed one scene, this scene would be better, this episode would be better. It's like, this is like one of the tent poles for me for what makes me like episodes.
Yeah.
And I was like, if they didn't really hit that tent pole, could I give it 5 out of 5? So that's where how I ended up at 4.5.
That's fair.
But I think on every other category, it's maybe one of the best episodes.
So good. I was like, you came out so strong. I was like, all right, CSI, like you knew what was up. You took your break and you came back like hot and heavy, and I'm for it. And we'll see if this continues into our next episode, our to be continued when we return with season 4, episode 2, All for Our Country. In the meantime, you can find us on Patreon, Who Are You, Cole, and a CSI Podcast, Facebook, same way. We're also on Twitter/X, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Who Are You CSI Pod. We also have a website, whoareyoucsipod.com. And thank you. We've gotten like a few people commenting on our social media posts as of late. We really appreciate it. We love when you guys interact. So thank you so much for like interacting with us and letting us know your thoughts in the show. And continue doing that. We eat it up. We love it. So
we love it.
Give us all of that positive reinforcement. So
reminds us we're not just two people
just like
in our bedrooms recording podcasts. People are listening.
To be fair, I'm in my office.
I'm in my office/bedroom.
It's fair. I mean, you live with a lot of people. I just have this house to myself. So yeah. I don't have to like split, I don't have to like split common areas with anybody. I mean, other than my pets who do take up a lot of space, especially now that I have, how many foster mice do I have right now? Some got adopted. I still have 5. I still have 10. Oh my gosh. No. Yes. I have 10.
Yes.
No,
maybe.
I have the 2 moms, 3 of the girl babies. So that's 5. And then I have 5 boys. One of the boys keeps nipping me though, and I'm not happy with him.
Too bad you don't have a pet snake anymore.
No, I wouldn't do that to him. But I'm like, dude, he's so cute. I'm like, why do you have to be a little? He doesn't like bite. It's not like he's like trying to like murder me. But it's like I open his cage to like put food in or whatever, and he literally just comes waltzing out. So he's not like he's scared for his life. He comes like, he'll be hiding in his like tunnels and his bedding, and he'll come out, and he will slowly saunter over to me and just nip me. And I'm like, why? Why do you do that?
He wants to play. He's
he does not want to play. It is not a playful thing. But I'm like,
drop my food already.
I'm like, stop it. He's so cute though. So sorry. Yeah. I mean, follow me on Blue Sky if you want to see pictures of my foster mice. I post them there sometimes. But also follow our Who Are You Sis iPod Blue Sky. But otherwise, we will talk to you next week.
No spoilers.
No spoilers.